hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
We'd like to welcome everybody back to another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. We've got a kind of cool episode this week. We have a not just a special guest, but our first guest, Richard Holdman, who is it's a name you probably don't know, but I guarantee that you have seen some of the work that he has done. He is an extreme Christmas lighting enthusiast, and he has kind of been one of the mega viral videos that has gone around the internet for several years now. And we'll be talking to him and learning a little bit about the hobby and, you know, just what it takes to get in as a hobbyist. And, you know, he's actually taken it to the next level and is turned pro and does this for a living now and does professional big deal shows and displays all around the world. So I'd like to welcome Richard. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. Tell everybody a little bit about what an extreme Christmas lighting decorator is.
An extreme Christmas lighting decorator. Well, there's a lot of people getting into the hobby these days, but mostly it's people who have always liked Christmas lights, and seems that people always want to take it to the next level. So it's people that animate their Christmas lights to music. And so it's one of those crazy houses. You may have seen a lot of videos on the internet where it's all going to music, and it just people, they look at it and say, who does this kind of stuff? And so it's kind of a fun thing to be a part of.
It's a great hobby, and I'll let everybody in on a little secret. I am also an extreme lighting enthusiast. It's one of my hobbies as well. I am definitely not in any kind of league with Richard, but it's so much fun, especially when you see the families out there and the kids going crazy. And it's just an awesome hobby to get into. And if you're into sort of nerdy, techie, holiday-y hobbies, it's a fun one. You're probably asking yourself, why are we talking about this at the beginning of January? And the reason is because if you listen to this podcast and think that it is something that you are at all interested in, my friend, you need to start right now if you want to think about having a show up for 2015. So, you know, we thought we'd talk to Richard, learn a little bit about some of the, you know, ins and outs of doing it at your home, maybe hear some of his stories, because he's got some interesting stories to tell about, you know, managing relations with neighbors, because you can generate a lot of traffic at your home. And, you know, maybe put the bug in your ear and, you know, bring some new people into the hobby, because it is a fun hobby. When did you get
back
started?
Back away.
Yeah, it's not necessarily an inexpensive hobby, but, you know, any good hobby is one that you really don't want to keep track of the bills, right?
Yeah, so basically I'm just here to lend the sanity of not doing this.
Oh, yeah. It's, well, the first thing, you don't tell your wife how much you spent on everything.
Oh, no.
No. But so I, if you want me, I'll just give you a little my background with it all.
Absolutely.
So my background, I've done web technology. I've done video editing. I actually still own like a DJ business where I kind of do it now just for fun. But I've always been interested in technology and sound and lighting. My dad was a photographer, and we used to do multimedia shows. He used to help him when I was younger. And so I've always loved visual sounds, and I've always put up Christmas lights, but it was probably back in 2005. Anybody who's listening to this now who knows, who's into the hobby, they've of course heard Carson Williams. He was like the first one that had a video go viral. You know, there were a lot of people doing this, but his video kind of went viral. And I saw that back in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want to do that. And so I went to Home Depot. This was like right around Christmas time, and I bought a bunch of trees. And those are the, I don't know if you've seen any of my videos, I got 9 trees in front of my house. And those are the ones I bought, these trees at Home Depot. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to use those. And then I just started planning it, you know, throughout the year. And then 2006 was actually my first year of doing it.
Okay.
And So it always, I think, okay, I'm going to start out small, and but as the year kind of went on, I kept on going, you know, bigger and bigger. And so then 2006 was actually my first year.
Okay. So this is a question that I've got to ask being a fellow decorator. How much do you hate the song Wizards in Winter?
To tell you the truth, I don't hate it.
Really?
No. Yeah, there's a lot of people, and a lot of people, they can't stand listening to it. And it is burned out. It's burned out to death. But the thing is, when I watch a video, someone may post a lot of videos of a display. I like to watch that one because I know the song so well. It's become kind of like a ruler. It's just, I know the song drives you crazy and stuff, but it's kind of, I know exactly what parts are going to happen where. And so mm-hmm. it kind of gives me an idea, you know, of how to compare displays against each other.
Yeah. Is it the first song that you sequenced like almost everybody else?
I never sequenced that till my fourth year, actually.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Cause I know a lot of people were burned out on it, and I didn't use it. And I wanted to do songs that were unique, and maybe that's what helped some of my videos go viral, is some of the unique songs. And so it was actually, I think it was 2008. I actually did that Wizards in Winter. So.
Yeah, that's usually the first song everyone jumps in and does. And by the time you've tackled it and the learning curve of figuring out how the software works, you're just so sick of it that it's kind of an inside joke that it's the song that you hate. And, you know, for a long, long time, people wanted to hear it. I think maybe that's even dying down a little bit and people aren't kind of expecting it in those displays that they go see. But
well, yeah, I'll talk more about my commercial displays, but I think every commercial display I create, that's one of the songs because the clients request it.
Yeah.
And I know as far as like us in the hobby, yeah, we are like burned out of that song. It's all not again, not again. But just, you know, your average person that just, you know, they drive up to a house and watch it. I mean, it's funny because a lot of my clients, they don't even know that. What's that one song? They don't even know it's called Wizards in Winter or who it's made by.
Yeah, I'm going to call this out that this is like the Freebird of Christmas display music. Seriously, like you're burned out on it because of you being in the hobby, but most people want to hear that song and they want to see the lights flash.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they only hear it that one time, you know, during Christmas time, where people like us that are in the hobby, we're working, we're watching videos, we're listening, you know, it's like, oh, not that song again, not that song again. But, yeah. You know, for most people that aren't in the hobby, you know, it's only that one time a year that they're really hearing it.
I think it was probably about the third year I was doing a display and I finally said enough. I'm not doing that song this year. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, we would have everybody come over and sort of do a lighting party and, you know, have the family and friends, come over for the sort of inaugural throwing of the switch. And we did that third year. And at the end of it, you know, everybody, you know, applauds and tells you how amazing it is. And, you know, I had almost everybody came up to me and said, where's that song? The song I like. And it's like, oh, you guys liked it. I just couldn't stand to listen to it one more time.
Yeah. One thing I found out, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this who are in the Christmas hobby, is you will have a lot of songs and you get sick of it. And so next year you decide to add some new songs and usually got to eliminate some other songs in the process. And I used to do that every year. And then people, you know, that you don't have that one song on anymore, you know, it's like, well, I put new songs on. And so a lot of people too, where Christmas is about, you know, making memories and it's about tradition and it's a lot of repetitive things that we do at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times people, they come to a light show and they have like this emotional experience. It's emotional. It's like, wow. And it may be that Wizards in Winter song or some other song. And when next Christmas comes along, it's like, oh, they're thinking, oh, I can't wait to see that house and see that one song, you know, that they had that experience with. And then if it's not there, you know, they'll come tell you, you know, where's that Wizards in Winter song or, you know, or whatever it is. And so That's one thing that I have experienced before.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of put yourself in, you know, the shoes of the people that are coming and, you know, thinking about the fact that you're building those memories that, you know, they may have a really strong connection. And I guess it gives me a little bit of an appreciation for, you know, how much does, you know, Elton John want to go out and perform the same songs for 30 years? It's, you know, probably just beginning to kind of bump up to that when you just are so familiar with a piece that you just can't almost stand it anymore. But then you realize that people have a really strong bond with that. And, you know, you're not doing it necessarily to make yourself happy. You're doing it to make other people happy and to build those memories for them is a big part of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. So,
yeah, it's interesting that you said that you kind of got into it from Carson. I think, you know, I don't know who the current, you know, video of the moment is. It may be you that is, what people would say are, you know, getting them into the hobby. I'm in that same boat where, you know, it was Carson, that I saw that got me in. And I remember seeing a article on Slashdot where people were violently going back and forth about whether it was truly computer controlled or whether it was stop motion photography. And, I was fascinated by it. I love Christmas lights and, you know, have loved Christmas music. And, you know, that's kind of what got me into it. You know, we've thrown a lot of terms around in technical jargon, like, you know, sequencing and things like that. Maybe talk for just a second about sort of how the computer fits in to control the lights so that people understand what exactly it is we're talking about when we say, you know, computer controlled and sort of what pull the curtain back and what makes the magic.
Okay. And so I actually have a video on my website at like holman.com/Christmas. You click on tutorials because I used to get a lot of questions from people. And then one year I spent about 20 minutes just with a video camera, just going through explaining it. So if people want a few more details, they can go there. I'm sure you'll put them in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But you can kind of think of it, you know, you put lights on your house and you control it with some kind of controller, and you can think of it like a big board with a bunch of light switches. And so one of these basic controllers, it has like 16 channels, which kind of means, imagine you're looking at like 16 different light switches. Now you could sit there in front of it and like try to listen to the music. And I'm sure as like kids do this, I did as a kid, where you listen to music and you're kind of flipping those switches off and on. But imagine like 16 light switches, and this light switch might be hooked up to the tree, and this other light switch is hooked up to the lights on your house, and you're doing that. And so then the computer comes along. It's like, okay, instead of a person doing it, I'm going to hook up a computer, and now it's going to flip the switches. And that's kind of a very basic way to explain it. And so what you do is you have the computer, and it's hooked up to this controller that acts like those light switches. And you use a program to flip those switches off and on. Now it gets a little more complex because now we can actually fade it. So you can think of it as, you know, just not 16 switches, but now I got 16 dimmers and everything. And of course, how complex these are, there's no way a person can be back there. Or maybe we have a few elves doing their Christmas magic. So, that's a very, you know, basic explanation of kind of how it works. And then, because a lot of people I would get on my comments in my videos is, you know, they think I maybe have speakers out there blasting, you know, it out. And if you've been to any of these displays, you know, where we use a low power FM transmitter, where, you know, it'll go like a few hundred feet so the people in their cars can just tune to like 99.9 FM. And so it's pretty much using a computer, a low power FM transmitter. And most of the time, these are just your basic lights at Walmart. A lot of people will watch my videos, and I'm changing colors. And the technology has changed a little bit now with these RGB elements. But like on my videos, when I go between red, green, and white, it's like everything goes red and green and white. That means I have red, green, and white lights on everything. And, you know, most of these lights I just bought at Walmart. So that's kind of a little explanation of how it works.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that I can guess the two most common questions that you get, and that is, how much is your electric bill, and how do you make the radio know when to play the songs that you want to play? People can't seem to get their head around the fact that you can have your own little radio transmitter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people pull up and they're just, some people were thinking, how are you synchronizing this to the radio station, what they're playing, you know, and everything. So, I mean, yeah. And so it's just like, yeah, it's a little box. It's a little transmitter. Cause I don't know if people, you've seen the little handheld like Motorola radios and everything just kind of works on different frequencies. So it's almost just like a little FM transmitter box that you can buy these online. And, you know, there's some rules with the FCC where you can broadcast, you know, within a certain distance, nothing, you know, too powerful. So,
and I haven't kept up on it as much. I know that when a few years ago, Ramsey was, you know, sort of the name for the home hobbyist FM transmitters. I know that there's some other companies like EDM and, there's another one I can't think of off the top of my head. I know gets a lot of traction, but,
Yeah, there's a thing, it's called the, I think it's the FCC Part 15 rules or a few things where it has to be so low powered where it's almost not even usable. Where if you're able to get the FM transmitter maybe 40 feet in the air, position it right, the right place, it works. And a lot of people, it's kind of in a gray area with like even Ramsey, because Ramsey, they can't just sell you a complete FM transmitter. They have to sell you all the parts.
You got
to
get friendly with the soldering iron.
But of course, there's people on the internet and on eBay who will assemble them and then sell them. But there's actually a lot of little good transmitters coming out of China. I actually bought some this past season for some projects where they're only like $50 and they actually work really nice. I'm like, wow.
And that's amazing.
Yeah. They probably work just as good as some of the higher end Ramseys that you know, transmitters that I was using a couple years ago that were, you know, a couple $100 at least. So
I would be concerned about, is it something you have to worry about being too powerful? I know that the Chinese don't necessarily care about, you know, FCC title, whatever Part 15 rules, like, you know, we have to.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that go into, you know, how far does something transmit? And I'm also a ham radio operator, so I do ham radio, so I kind of know some things about antennas and how radios work. But yeah, a lot of them, they'll say like 5 watt, you know, if it says like 5 watt FM transmitter, yeah, you put that up and you're broadcasting like 5 miles around. Yeah, you're going to get in trouble.
Oh yeah. That's like a college transmitter.
Yeah. You're going to get in trouble, you know, with that. And, you know, the basic rule of thumb, basic thing is, you know, you want something that, there's a lot of resources online and I go to those where people talk about, you know, all these things and you don't need, cause some people they'll put up an FM transmitter for the Christmas display and they'll want to, you know, they broadcast 2 miles. You only need a broadcast, you know, in front of your house.
Yeah. Just hundreds of feet. That's about it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the best thing to do is of course, turn it on and then get in your car and start driving around. If you can drive a half mile away, you know, if you're still hearing it, that's probably a problem.
Yeah. I will admit that I have been guilty of, you know, dialing up my Ramsey and, you know, driving around the neighborhood and marveling at the fact that you can hear it a quarter of a mile away. But, you know, lucky me, knock on wood, I haven't had, a black van pull up yet.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you will not get in trouble unless you are broadcasting, you know, several miles away. And also, if you start interfering with other stations.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Even if you're only going, 1,000 feet, but if you're broadcasting over another station, because they have the license to that frequency, you can get in trouble. So, of course, the biggest thing is, you know, find a frequency that nobody's using.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, odds are you're not going to compete well with an actual licensed transmitter because they're going to just stomp all over your signal. And even if someone gets right up close, it's probably going to sound bad. So, yeah, hopefully you're in an area that has some empty space on the dial. I know that can be hard in certain parts of the country.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, the basics are pretty basic when you talk about it. There, you know, you have a controller, it connects to the computer. You have software that runs on the computer that, you know, turns the switches on and off and controls the lights. You know, maybe talk a little bit about what happens when you do put something together that people really, really, you know, love. I know that you had some issues with your HOA in your neighborhood because you got so popular.
Yeah. And so I started back in 2006 was my first year. And it's like I spent all this work. I created, you know, this display. And then, you know, you start it and you get some people that stop every now and then. And the biggest thing is like word of mouth is people, they start telling, have you seen this house? And by the end of that season, it was getting where there would be at least 15 cars out there trying to watch it. And I actually, we moved into this new neighborhood and we built a house. We were like the only second house in there. It was like this private drive area. We did not have a gate yet, but it was like there was an HOA. And the second year, they actually got a gate. And they left the gate open for Christmas, you know. And the problem is we started getting more and more traffic. And so there were some people that didn't like it. A lot of people loved the lights. But then my second year in 2007, it was getting where I had to be always out there to manage the traffic. I'd have like two or three friends with me. And it get to get where we'd have like 50, 60 cars waiting to try to see this.
Wow.
And so luckily outside of where the gate is, there was a big stretch of road with no houses at all. So it was really easy to line up the cars there. And we always had to have someone in the back of the line. So if the pizza guy shows up or someone's just trying to get into the neighborhood, would be with radios. Okay, here comes a neighbor. They're coming through. And, you know, that helped quite a bit. But it got to the point where it was so much traffic. And the problem is I was trying to have it in this like gated community, you know, where we had it. And on one of the nights, it was like 2 days before Christmas, traffic was backed up actually almost a mile. And it was just, it was crazy, and the police they came out, and it was almost like gridlock, and I actually had to just shut the display down and just tell everyone to keep going.
Oh.
And, you know, people were waiting in line. There were a lot of disappointed people, and, yeah, a lot of my neighbors were upset because we were able to manage. If it got about 60, 70 cars, we were able to manage it, but that night it just exploded.
I can't even imagine trying to manage 60 or 70 cars. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, so we always that year I spent more time working on traffic and managing traffic than I did setting up the display.
Well, and you know, talk about that, because I mean, this is not something that you just throw together in an afternoon. I mean, how many hours do you think it takes you to put your display up when you were doing it at that house?
Oh, it's so. I had around 60,000 lights. And I mean, it was something I was working on kind of all year long. You know, you create the arches, and I created the arches and I had them in the back of my yard in July, right? I'm testing these lights.
And neighbors never look at you weird when that happens.
Well, in fact, I had a neighbor knock on my door because I was inside my house. Those trees, I had them all set up in a room. And I'm actually testing them inside. And I had a neighbor like knock on my door, and he was like, "Is everything okay?" I go, "Oh yeah." He's going, "I don't know if you had a fire in your house." I go, "Oh, I'm doing Christmas lights." And I show him, he started laughing. And yeah, because he just like, behind the curtains, it was kind of looked like a fire, you know, kind of going off and on. So it was kind of funny. So I was just, you know, I work on it. It's so hard to say how many hours that go into it. Because, you know, something you work on, you know, all year round.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hundreds of hours when you think about the sequencing is a whole thing all in of itself. But just the physical, like you said, putting together the arches and, you know, wiring up the trees and just planning it. And then I don't know how long it took you. My display was never of the scale of anything that yours was, but it would take me 50 or 60 hours, you know, usually working the week before and the week of Thanksgiving, you know, from sunup to sundown, putting things in the yard and doing all the wiring and hooking things up and testing and, and then countless hundreds of hours that lead up just to that.
Well, see, what was so funny is that because I lived in this, I lived in this gated community, and my house, it was like 35 houses, and my house was like the smallest house in all there. There were some like really big, nice houses.
Wow, and your house is really nice.
Well, there was houses that, you know, that were twice as big as mine. We actually, when we moved in, you had to have a certain square footage to even build there. And we actually did the smallest house you could. Mm-hmm. And all these like huge houses, you know, moved in, you know, after us. And it's funny, when I was out there, because I installed all these lights myself, I programmed them all. And when I was out there doing traffic, I could hear people talking about, they would say like, I wonder who they hired to do all this, you know, and then they thought, who lives in the, you know, this house? They were thinking, they had no idea that the guy out there in the snow and the rain and telling them to move, I'm the one that did it. it's kind of a funny experience. But
so I want to interject just a little bit of experience that I've had. And one of the things that Richard's talking about is that he was out there directing traffic. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend, folks, if you're thinking about doing this, commit to doing what Richard did. Because if you just set your lights up and leave, that's bad. First-hand experience, neighbors of my in-laws this year, first year there, did this. They got on the television. They were even on television in Indianapolis, which was a good 2.5 hours away. And they were trying to raise money for a little girl who had cancer, which is great. They just turned their lights on and left. And several times my in-laws couldn't get out of their house, couldn't get into their house because there were just people parked, and people would park and like set up lawn chairs in their driveway because there was no one out there saying, hey, you know, be respectful of the other people in the neighborhood. And I think that the responsibility that if you're going to do something on a huge scale, and you're going to advertise, and you're going to try to get the traffic out there, be responsible and, you know, help manage that traffic and help, you know, not have your neighbors hate you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You definitely got to watch the situation, of course, because, you know, it's so much fun to do this, of course, and everything. But, yeah, I can see how you just take off and just let chaos ensue. And you know, you got to think about your neighbors, of course, also, and watch the situation. Now, most of the time, people behave themselves, but, you know, you have a few people that think they can, you know, I've had people back into people's on their lawn to, you know, drive their car on other people's grass so they could get to see a better angle. I'm like, oh, I go running up there. What are you doing? And, you know, someone, they want to impress the entire neighborhood with their stereo system in their car or something, you know. So,
yeah, this is why we can't have nice things.
You know what's so funny? That phrase is so popular. Me and my wife have been talking about that. I went and saw the Penguins of Madagascar, and they dropped that in there, too. It's like, so, yeah, I love that.
Yeah. It's a raging debate, I know, among people who do this about, you know, we all have obligations and, you know, nobody I know does this for, you know, any personal gain. I mean, people do raise money for charity and most people just do it because they truly love doing it. So it's not like a business. And there's a raging debate about, you know, if you have to go and leave, do you leave the display on and hope that people are sane and civil, or do you turn it off and then run the risk of disappointing people? And, yeah, you know, it's tough. And I know other people who have had, you know, some pretty severe problems with their neighbors. There's one gentleman I know in the hobby who is under a binding arbitration with his neighbors. They ended up going to court over this and got kicked back. I think they went to arbitration, and they have a legal document that says how many days a week and from what start time to what end time he can do the show. And I mean, just, it's a nightmare for him. So,
oh yeah, that's how it became. I can kind of talk a little bit about, cause I actually had to move my display, and because 2006, 2007, so as I was talking, 2007, it got to the point where it was a lot of traffic, and we were managing most of the time. We'd manage it. There was no problems, but I think a lot of neighbors, they just didn't like so many people coming into this gated community, you know, and sure. I was like, I should just move out of here. But, and so anyway, a vote was taken, and the vote wasn't if you could put Christmas lights on your house. A vote was taken if the gate should be open or closed for Christmas. And so at an HOA meeting, and it was almost 50-50, and it was just a few votes, you know, that the gate should be closed. And so I'm like, well, I'm not gonna. And so I actually moved it from my house. I went, moved it to my parents' house. And the next year, what I did, the only thing I did for Christmas lights or Christmas decorations was I only put up a big inflatable Grinch in my front yard. And so then I had it at my parents' house for 2 years, and it was pretty good there, but it wasn't quite the same. I really liked it at my house. So I knew I was only going to be probably doing it one more year because I started doing some commercial displays, and I was getting, it was getting to the point where managing the traffic was more work than doing the display, and I just didn't have the resources anymore. So I brought it back to my house, and I, you know, this was, my video was starting to go viral, and I was just thinking, okay, I'm just going to create this light show and just record and just put it on YouTube. But the president of the HOA, he actually contacted me and said, you know what? Well, you know, we hate you to do all this work. And he kind of liked the lights, but he could see a lot of points, you know, that the other people had. So we would actually only have it running on certain days.
Oh, but then open the neighborhood to it?
Yeah, it opened up the neighborhood to it. And because I told him, I said, I'm just doing this. There's some other circumstances that actually happen, which we could be a whole nother topic in itself. We had a person in our neighborhood. He actually ended up being a murderer and like murdered his wife and everything. Oh, man. And he actually ended up being a con man and all this crazy stuff. And he, and you know, it's a really crazy story. And that's what made a lot of people in the neighborhood didn't want all these people in the neighborhood, because he said that his house was like robbed and they stole all his jewelry and all this. He's actually in prison now, and he committed like all this fraud. And what happened is he made that up too, that his house got robbed, and he told the whole neighborhood his house got robbed because we were allowing all these people in. So I think maybe some people felt bad about that.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, if you look up the name, Martin McNeil, there's a whole 2020 thing about him. And yeah, he just lived a few doors down.
Wow. And that's so crazy.
Yeah.
On TV, so there for was a completely different reason.
Exactly. And so he was against the light show, I know, because people would write back and forth in the emails. But so I knew it was going to be my last year, and I told them probably that. So, you know, we did it. It was open about 3 days out of the week, and that was in 2010.
Wow. Okay.
And my video, you know, I have a video on YouTube, the Amazing Grace one. I think it's up to 37, 38 million views. And
39 million as of right now.
Okay.
My gosh. What's it like to have something that's been seen almost 40 million times?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting if I look at the statistics about it, because a lot of it's actually outside the U.S.
Really?
Yeah, probably like 15 million of those views are actually from Korea. It's from South Korea. Really? So, yeah. It just took off. And what's kind of interesting, that Amazing Grace song, I mean, everything worked out with that video. Because what I did is I waited until it snowed. And that's kind of what makes the video so magical, I think, is there's snow. And I recorded it right when the sun was almost going to be coming up. So you got this nice little glow.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out that way, and it starts really slow, and that's the song you think Amazing Grace. You know, a lot of people think a Christmas song, and so it was a very unique song, a very different version of it, and I don't know, people just had a connection with it, and I almost didn't put that in my show, and I'm glad I did, though, and I put it out there, because my show was running for several weeks, and then I programmed that show and put it in, and everyone just absolutely loved it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the one when you see the video that's passed around about, you know, you've got to see this amazing Christmas house. It's that video. That's the one. And even this year, I see it passed around and, you know, obviously not credited back to you. It's been copied and recopied so many times. It's amazing.
Well, I know. I've actually had people who don't even know me really, and you know, I've forwarded onto me. I'm like somehow on their email list, and they'll say, "Yeah, check out this house and everything." So
wow,
and yeah. So of course, you know, I don't earn any revenue from the video or anything. I get people who contact me who want displays, but. Yeah, it's just gone viral. It's kind of been very unique.
So now you do this professionally. I mean, you've taken this hobby and that's what you do. So, I mean, maybe talk a little bit about how you make that jump from, is it getting noticed? Is it 40 million hits that makes that happen? At what point did the emails just start and never stop?
And so it was, 2010 was my last year, and I started doing some smaller projects, some local displays here, and pretty much I started having people just contact me, and then I was laid off of work. I was in IT doing that. Started looking at other jobs, but people started contacting me about this, and I just started doing this, and now this is actually like my full-time job.
Wow.
And I'm starting to get into other lighting besides just Christmas now. And what's really unique is that most of my jobs have been outside the U.S. because the video, it's viral and there's, you know, about 20 million views in the U.S., but all the other ones are outside the U.S. And doing these animated Christmas light shows, there's not a lot of these even at malls outside the U.S. And so I started having these companies contact me because they saw the video. And that's pretty much how I get all my business now. And I don't really even go out and try to get, you know, hitting malls up and saying, do this, because they kind of come to me right now.
Yeah, so this last year you were just in, was it Peru?
Yeah, I was in Peru. And so, I mean, my first one that I did, and this was my third year, but they contacted me 3 years ago, was in Argentina. And so I was like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And then as I was getting ready to do that show in the same year in October, these people from Russia contacted me. I was telling them like, no, it's kind of tight. We need you here, you know? And I was like, okay, we can maybe make this work. And so, yeah, that first year, it's like I went to Argentina, and then I went to Russia, to Moscow. And since then, you know, I've done shows in Korea. Yeah, I was in Peru, you know, this just about a month or two ago, doing one there. Up in Canada. And then, you know, a lot for malls around in the U.S., California, Minnesota.
So when you go someplace, do you send ahead a list and say, you know, make sure when I show up, I've got, you know, 10 cases of this and 5 boxes of that? Or are you responsible for bringing it all with you? How do you do that? What are the logistics like of that?
Yes. I mean, I tell you, it's not for the faint of heart doing some of these shows, especially in South America, some of these because the one like in Argentina, it's actually at this remote location. It's like right on the border of Brazil and Argentina. It's this really specialized duty-free shop, and it's a good size, but they don't have like a normal hardware store, and you can't buy things. And so it's pretty much you got to send everything. I have to load up pallets full of lights, and it's whatever I send, that's what I have to use. I mean, if I'm short plugs, I just can't go buy more.
Yeah.
And so, and it's really, I mean, it's a really different experience. And so I send all these items, and, you know, things don't quite work out the way you plan, and you're just most of the time, like the first time I did for Argentina, I like designed how I was going to do it. But when I got there, I realized we're going to have to do this differently. And so a lot of work that I did, I just had to scrap. So a lot of these places where it's my first time in foreign countries, I kind of have an idea what I'm going to do, but I don't actually have a design yet. And like this one in Peru, I didn't know exactly. I just knew I was going to be putting lights on things. But then when I get there, I actually start designing, I actually program on location and, you know, do all the work.
So you don't have sequences ready to go or anything?
No, and so I built up a pretty good library of like sequences, and usually all my clients, they see a video and they like the Wizards in Winter, you know, that we were talking about.
I want two of those and one of these and six of those.
Exactly. And so I have like so many different displays. I've done Wizards in Winter there where I can kind of cut and paste, and so that helps quite a bit. If I'm doing something from scratch, like a certain song they want, you know, yeah, it'll take me some time.
That's amazing. I saw pictures from from the project that you just did in Peru on Facebook. And like, so to give a sense of scale, like how big of a display was that? How many lights were involved there? Because it was a lot.
Okay. There was about 300,000. Let's see. We had it was close to 300,000 lights. We had over 6,000 like strings of lights. And that was the first project I did where it was actually all 220 volt, because that's what Peru is.
Sure.
And Argentina is also 220 volt. But when they contacted me, nobody sells 220 volt lights in the U.S. And I was having to ship all this stuff from the U.S. But since I started working with 110 volt, and then we use transformers down there because everything's 220, and then we have to use transformers to step it down
right to
110. So I have transformers all over the place, and we had to do the same thing over in Russia.
Holy cow.
And it's kind of crazy because they contacted me so late. The only place we get Christmas lights is from the U.S., and you know, all Christmas lights are made in China. So the Christmas lights, you know, they were shipped all the way to the U.S., and they were shipping them all the way back over to Russia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was crazy. But this one for Peru, they contacted me far enough ahead where I was able to get lights directly from China and have them shipped over, and it's all 220 volt, which is very nice.
Oh, so you didn't have to use the transformers this time.
Yeah, but I got shocked a few times, and that 220 bites a little bit more.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
So,
ouch.
Yeah, but that's a technology thing that's kind of fun to talk about with, you know, you're able to run twice as many lights, though. Everything's LED, so it's not too big of a case now.
But oh, I can't even. Yeah.
When you're running higher voltage, you can run, you know, twice as many lights.
So, much. Okay, for 300,000 lights, like I know in the old incandescent days, you're talking 500, 600 amps. What is LEDs? What does 300,000 LEDs take in terms of service?
Yeah, so roughly like a string of lights, incandescent would take like 10. Normally take like 100 watts, and mm-hmm. LEDs use roughly about 10% of that power.
Wow. And
so, you know, it's about, you know, 10, it's only about 10 watts per string.
So you could conceivably run a display like that in under 100 amps of service.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah, I mean,
wow. It's,
so like my display at my house in that viral video, it's all just incandescent. There's no LED because it was back in, you know, 2006, 2007. And I installed like 15 dedicated 20 amp circuits and just to run that. And we're now, if the whole thing was LED, it would only take maybe two outlets. I mean, two breakers to run that whole show. And it used to be, yes, you used to have to calculate every single amp, but man, with LEDs, since they use, you know, so much, less power, it's just, you can use a lot of LEDs now, which is nice.
Yeah. All my stuff is still incandescent for the most part. And I think I actually borrowed it from you. I don't know if I read it on your website or if it was a post that you had written on a message board about you had it set up and balanced so that you could have all of your white lights on and then either all of your green or all of your red, but never all green and all red. So you could do all white and all green or all white and all red or half green, half red.
And
you just have to sit down with a piece of paper and calculate, okay, am I pulling too much current here and how do I rearrange it over there? The LED is amazing.
Yeah, I think I still have that on my the Holdman Christmas website. I have like a spreadsheet.
Yeah,
you could do it and it would balance it out. And where if I just always had that rule, I would never turn on red and green at the same time on this, like, because one tree will have red, green, and white lights on it. And as long as I never turned on red and green at the same time, it was, I figured it out, so I wouldn't overload. But yeah, if I accidentally turn everything on, yeah, I had a fuse blowing, you know, fuses that are blowing out in the controllers, breakers stripping, it would have been drawing way too much current. But
well, maybe talk for just a second about your approach to sequencing, because, you know, the hardware and the technical setup and all of that is one component. But I think really what makes a show, a display really successful or not is the sequencing. And, you know, if you take a poll, I'm just going to say, I don't know too many people that do as good a job, as you do, especially with the fades and, you know, not just the seizure inducing on and off, but, you know, the smoothness of it. And, you know, how do you get that? 'Cause I've sat down and tried to do that myself and I don't have that in me. It's, that is a talent.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I just started playing with the software and that's just how it came out of me. And so, and yeah, I watched a lot of videos on YouTube and I kind of look at it like this. When I look at a display, I kind of think of it as a kaleidoscope. You know, I think a lot of movement where things are not necessarily just flashing off and on, but, you know, things are kind of moving back and forth and I'm fading it as I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one thing to do is just to look at other people's sequences, because I do sell some sequences on my website, and I have a free sequence like Jingle Bells that anybody can just download it and load it into the software. And the software that we use is made by a company called Lidarama, and you can open it up. And that's the biggest teaching tool, is just to open up someone else's sequence and watch it. And you start, oh, wow, that's how they do that. That's how they get that look. And so the software kind of works kind of like, you know, you've used it, but it kind of works on a timeline, like video editing software, or audio editing software. It's like this timeline goes along. And it does take a lot of time to, you know, program one song, because the songs that I had in my personal display, I mean, I would kind of go in and tweak them all, but I mean, I would spend maybe 10 to 20 hours on just that one song, you know, getting it just right.
Oh, it's a huge amount of time. I always, when people ask, I always like to tell them that the sequencing software, it almost kind of looks like a little bit like Excel, where you have along the left-hand side, instead of having the numbered columns, you've got, you know, labels for your different, you know, maybe upstairs window, downstairs window, you know, tree, bush. And then across the length of it, like you mentioned, it's the time, and you have little blocks that you put in. Different people do it different ways, but most people put it in, you know, to the beat, and then you go in and you turn on or turn off or fade up or fade down those little blocks. And it sounds simple, but then when you start talking about, oh, 128 or 256 or 384 channels, it becomes overwhelming to do.
Oh yeah. It's, I mean, this was my second year doing it, but I programmed some sequences for a drive-through display, and it has like 1800 channels.
Oh man.
And you know, and yeah, it's like, and there are all these different elements. It's a huge drive-through display, and there's like 1800 channels with all these arches, mega trees and everything. And so I don't know how much you want to get to the other technologies. I mean, and so a new thing that's been catching on the last few years is like this, the RGB. And I don't know if you played with that much.
I have. I was an early adopter. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to do a display this past Christmas and then the Christmas before, I moved and just didn't get to it the year before last, and this year ran out of time. So I actually was a little bit of an early adopter 3 years ago, where you pretty much had to buy everything yourself out of China and figure out how to put it together. And for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, there's, you know, the RGB, red, green, and blue, where everything is discreetly controlled, and you can make it all red, all green, all blue, but you can also blend those together to theoretically make, I think they say 16 million colors. It's not that many. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of go hot and cold on this. I love the traditional look. I love incandescence. I realize that, you know, you just, unless you've got a lot of power, it's really hard to make that argument over the LEDs, but you know, I love what the RGB displays can do, but at the same time, I sometimes feel like it's not very Christmassy.
Well, it is. It's more concert style. It just depends on what you're going for.
Yeah.
I've done some displays with RGB. I did a dealership in Texas, you know, where we do it all with. And RGB, it's a lot more work. It is. It's a lot more planning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in the programming, it starts to be where, you know, it's thousands of channels. If you're trying to turn each individual light off and on, it almost becomes, you can't hardly manage it. And you kind of have to program them different, but it does, it gives a different look. If, especially if, you know, people do it, it works good for Halloween. They'll outline their house with like LED strip lighting. And you maybe seen, you know, Kevin out of California, he's has a viral video with, you know, for a Halloween with like Thriller and some other songs. And yeah, that works good, but yeah, it doesn't look as Christmas. Well, people are used to like traditional looking Christmas lights. And one effect that you don't get with the RGB is, cause I would normally have like a tree and I'd have red, green, and white lights on it, but they're all separate. And so when I switch between red and green, there were like different lights turning off and on. It's almost like, you know, the specs of the lights are jumping a little bit back and forth. With RGB, it's the same light that's changing color, and it does kind of give it a different look.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, there's not way that's bad or good. It's just kind of, you know, some people really like the traditional stuff. Some people like, wow, the effects you can do with RGB stuff is pretty good. But those, you know, people getting started, RGB, there's a lot bigger learning curve, that's for sure. So that's just a heads up.
Yeah, well, in addition to RGB, there's really kind of two kinds. There's, you know, what people in the hobby call dumb RGB, where you have a string of lights or a strip of lights, and that whole string or that whole strip, it's all one unit, and you can turn it on, you can turn it off, you can make it change colors, you can fade it. But then, you know, sort of the newest new thing is what people call pixels, and that's where you have a string or a strip, and every individual LED on that string is addressable. And that lets you do some really cool things. Like you may have heard Richard talk about mega trees. And, you know, what that is people will put a pole up in their yard, you know, 15, 20 feet. I don't really know if there's a general consensus on the minimum height to consider it a mega tree, but I think it's around 15 or 20 feet. And they'll run strips of these pixel bulbs. And so that's a very, you know, gridded out and spaced, stripes basically around the mega tree. And then you can do cool things. You basically now have created a really granular, but it's a TV screen. And I've seen displays where people will put pictures up and you're sitting back 50 or 75 feet in a car and, you know, you can see it's a picture of Santa Claus dancing on the mega tree. And it does make for some really amazing, you know, concert level effects. It's really cool.
Oh yeah. In fact, the first pixels that people were using, they're actually used in signs, you know, the LED signs,
yeah,
in front of like Walgreens or a place. And so, I mean, those were like the first pixels that people were using, you know, those. And it's pretty much just like this outdoor video screen technology. And then you're kind of just wrapping it around either a tree or put it, you know, over a window and everything. So, and, you know, it's becoming more affordable, of course. And yeah, and there's more software.
Yeah, it's still kind of in the realm of DIY, though, isn't it? I mean, there are some vendors that are now bringing more turnkey pieces in, but you still got to get your hands pretty dirty with pixels.
Oh yeah, you do. It's a lot of work. I mean, there's a lot, even on the software end. I mean, we start, you know, because normally if I would have a tree in my front yard, this is like the different if I'm just doing, you know, these RGB pixels or let's say my mega tree, since a lot of people, you know, like to do that. I'll have like strings of lights and I might have two strings of light hooked into one channel, which is like one of those light switches, right? And so I might have 32 or so channels just for my mega tree. But then when you start controlling each individual, you know, pixel, you have three channels, for one for red, one for green, one for blue. And you get a lot of those, all of a sudden you start having, you know, thousands of channels.
Yeah.
And also on the back end, it just becomes a huge, you know, programming part of it. And that's why one thing I haven't done a lot of RGB pixel stuff with commercial displays. It's because, you know, I told you, like, I go there on location. I, like, design, program, and everything within usually 2 or 3 weeks. And there's, you know, with it's really hard to do that with RGB, you know, type of things.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine. Well, and the Lightarama software is not really, it doesn't work the best with some of those when you get into the, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 channel counts from what I've heard. I've not tried to do anything that insane, but apparently there are guys out there doing it.
Yeah. So, of course, like everything technology, we get better and better. So,
yeah.
And it's neat, you know, to see, you know, some of the displays. I mean, there's, and I've seen some displays out there that on, the people post on YouTube. I can tell people put in a ton of work and, you know, and, you know, the sequencing even is pretty decent and everything, but they don't really go, you know, viral. But of course, we had, you know, Tom's video who went viral of the Star Wars, you know, this year. This is all, you know, RGB pixels. So,
yeah, he was everywhere. Yeah. And his is really cool, but it's, to me, it's not necessarily as Christmassy, but it's beautiful.
Oh yeah, it's one of those things that's just like so over the top, and that's why people love to forward on viral videos. It's just like, whoa, that's just crazy. It's like, who are these people? What, you know? And so that's like one video. It's like, oh my gosh, look at this guy's house. Look what he did. You know, he's a Star Wars music, and
yeah,
you know, these lights are on top of his house moving around.
Now, that's the one that impressed me, because he has all those moving fixtures and he has them in the weather enclosures. And, you know, I look at that and go, oh, my gosh, that's a big commitment to put that kind of stuff up on your house. So I appreciate it for, you know.
Ooh. So I was able to use for Argentina this year, because it's what's nice about that project. It's inside. And so we can do a lot of things that we normally couldn't do outside. And so, yeah, I have like 8 of those movies, the same kind that Tom used in there. And they actually project snowflakes, and oh, it's wow, all animated with the lights and everything. So, yeah, but yeah, Tom, his video was, yeah, it just really took off. And so.
So is he going to be the next pro out there doing the same thing? Is there a big market for this? I mean, do you turn a lot down?
I do have to turn a lot down, because people start contacting me at like the end of October or November. And there's like, you know, I was like, right now I'm just busy trying to execute, you know, my current jobs. And there is, it's more expensive than people would think. Especially if you have to hire somebody. I mean, because a lot of people ask me, you know, boy, how much did you spend? You know, how much did your whole display cost?
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
It's like, yeah, it's like, gosh, I don't even want to think about how much I spent, you know. But I mean, if because, you know, one thing I would do is I would hit all the after Christmas sales and you know, buying. So I get lights for like 50-75% off. But I mean, if you want to do a serious display, I mean, it's going to be at least $5,000, of course. And so those are just some numbers. People are like, listen, now, how much does this cost? You know, like you could easily spend $5,000-$10,000. But then I'll get like people who contact me where they want me to make one for their house. And I mean, just the cost of the equipment, it's like, whoa, you know, that's, you know, then there's the cost of someone designing it and actually installing it and taking it down.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't even imagine what you'd have to charge for a home user. And Yeah.
And so, I mean, so yeah, I'll get a lot of people, they'll contact me for their home. And once they kind of find out the prices of it, but most of the time, you know, I'll say, if you're willing to do it on your own, I'll give them the resources, you know, the Lightarama, the forums, the Facebook groups, and so, you know, to get them, because of course it's going to be a lot cheaper, you know, to do it on your own.
Yeah.
So that's what I mostly focus on, is just like commercial displays. But there's people, I've done a couple commercial displays for, you know, people who want to create this huge show, and they have, you know, they have a lot of money. There's people out there. I'm glad, you know, they keep me in business, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it sounds like you've got some really cool opportunities to get into some non-Christmas specific things. We were talking a little bit before we started. Maybe you can speak about some of that stuff, because that, like the ice castle thing, that sounded really, really cool.
Yeah. I mean, well, one project I'm working on right now are these, there's a company here in, they started here in Utah a few years ago where they make these large ice castles. They spray water at night when it's freezing. They have them up on these really big PVC sprinkler heads in it. And it, if you look up just like Ice Castles, Utah, you'll see them. You'll see a lot of pictures. There's actually a few even videos that have gone viral on YouTube. If you look up the Piano Guys Ice Castles, you'll see they have a video with millions of views where it's actually filmed there. But before they would actually just put normal like work lamps in these and light them up. But they contacted me this year, and I know the people where we're actually lighting up all these ice castles with these RGB floodlights, LED floodlights, so we can make them any color. And so now I'm starting to, you know, do stuff like that. And they have like four other locations here in the U.S. Where the ice castles will be. And one thing I've been getting into is like water fountains. A really popular thing are these splash pads that they now install in some parks and at some malls where you may have seen them, where the kids run out and the water shoots up and down.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so, yeah, so I'm starting to do some of that now where there's LEDs like in the splash pad. And so now I can, you know, synchronize it all to music. And then when it's nighttime, the water and the lights, you know, I can actually synchronize. So I'm doing some of that now. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. I am fascinated. I've seen a few Christmas displays for guys in warmer climates that have integrated like ponds and whatnot in the front yard, and that really looks amazing. I think that'd be really cool to see a synchronized, you know, water light show like that, kind of a little mini Bellagio thing going on.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Well, that's cool. What are some of the scariest working conditions, you know, down in Peru and Argentina? I'm curious if there is you know, maybe some electrical issues aren't quite the same. Like, what are some of the weirdest, scariest working conditions you've been in?
And so Peru was pretty good. Argentina, yeah, it's like everything, I don't know if they still have codes or what, but everything, the electrical, you go into these places and it's just amazing, the electrical work. I mean, even in offices, instead of having plugs, they'll actually just cut the wire. They'll strip it off and they'll stick the wire just straight into a power strip or into the wall.
What?
And you'll see that all over the place. And I actually saw that in Peru a little bit too, for the people that work on the construction and everything. And it's crazy.
And it's 220, right?
Yeah, it's 220. I just like tagged my arm on some filing cabinet before and I've gotten shocked and everything. So, yeah, it's some interesting conditions there.
Now, do you speak Portuguese or Spanish?
I do not know any Spanish.
So that would terrify me, is going there and then not being able to talk to people.
Well, and so, you know, so some of these places, what I do is I usually will go there. I've been bringing an assistant. So when I went to Peru, I actually brought an assistant and he knows Spanish really well. So that helps, of course, a lot.
Yeah.
Because if I go to a mall and do it, they'll usually have a pretty good work crew of just maintenance people,
mm-hmm.
you know, 10 workers, 10, 15 workers. And some of these people, they've done actually kind of Christmas lights before. And so they'll give me like a crew of people and, you know, they don't speak English. I don't speak any Spanish, but I had my assistant. But in Argentina, though, I didn't bring my assistant who spoke. I brought another assistant. He didn't know Spanish, though. But they give me someone there who knows English, who's always with me. But yeah, there's always, you know, there's always trying to communicate sometimes because I'm in a different place. I'm like, oh, okay, I got to go find the translator and everything. But and the same thing was like in Russia. You know, it was like one person that could translate, and I always had him with me. And it's kind of interesting, the different cultures and everything. And the one in Argentina was probably the most unique thing about the one in Argentina is you had to actually go through the checkpoint of Argentina, but not into Brazil. It's in this special little area. And the reason why it's there is because they don't have to charge anybody tax because it's out of this certain tax region of Argentina. And so every time that I would go to this place, I would have to get my passport stamped. And I would think, and so if you look at my passport, I mean, I probably just, it's kind of funny. It goes in, out of Argentina every single day when I was there. So
does that raise any suspicions with the TSA when you come back home?
It's, well, sometimes, you know, we'll get, coming out of Argentina when I go back, you know, flying, they'll look at it and they're kind of confused about why are you going in and out so much? I kind of have to explain it to them.
But, yeah. Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, it's a really fun experience though to, yeah, explore the different cultures and everything. And I kind of enjoy that. So I know it's probably not for everybody. And the one with Peru was hard because I get there and it was a big Santa's village that they made and we're putting all these lights on all the buildings. And it's absolutely amazing because it starts as a parking lot in Peru and they put down concrete and they build this whole building around it. And they build this concrete with drains and everything. And they actually make their own snow in the special area that all the kids can go play in.
Wow. And it's summer and, down there, right?
Yeah. It's like 75, 80 degrees outside and it never snows. It hardly ever even rains there, let alone never snows. And most people have never seen snow before. And what they would do is they would bring in a couple trucks every day of like huge blocks of ice, and it's like a huge snow cone machine maker, and it just grinds the stuff up, and then they shoot it into the air, and it kind of falls down, and they spend several hours, you know, all morning, and then they open it up at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Every day they'd have to do this, and it's, you know, the kids go in there, and they can make, you know, snowmen and snow angels and everything. And so anyway, but it's when I got there, everything was kind of running behind and they have like all these villages that you can kind of walk in and they were building and they weren't even done yet.
Huh.
And we're having to put lights on all these things. And so I actually had to stay there almost a full another week after I was supposed to go home. So I was there like over 3 weeks.
Well, and you've got family and you want to get back for the holidays too.
Exactly. And I got this. And then, but then all of a sudden it's just like a mad, just craziness the last few days trying before it's supposed to open. Right. And it's just crazy. It just, you know, things aren't completed yet and they want to open it up and you're just going like, you know, it's a very stressful, you know, but you know, people that they're a little more laid back because I was like, if I was trying to do something here in the U.S., yeah, I would just go absolutely nuts. But at least there, they kind of understand, okay, well, half of it's not done. We'll open it up and we'll kind of be working on it as people are in here and everything.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't fly here in the States.
Oh, yeah, it's a little crazy. But and usually the first year is always a little harder. But we're already talking about next year. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's very cool. So are for all of our listeners out there, are you still interested? Now that you've heard some of the horror stories, it is a fun hobby though. And there's some great people in the hobby who are willing to almost bend over backwards and help out. I mean, you know, Richard is a huge resource, has been a huge resource to the community with information. And, you know, there's a ton of guys out there that have done this. You know, some of them go back, gosh, 20 plus years, not animated, but just with Christmas decorating. And, you know, people, it's a good group of people. They will literally, you know, if you're having problems, they will pull together and help you out. I mean, I know of stories of, you know, days before their display is supposed to switch on, guys having equipment problems and other people shipping, you know, not asking for anything in return, just shipping equipment across the country. Here, I've got some extras. You use it for the month and ship it back when you're done. And, you know, that's it's a fun hobby. There's some awesome people.
Oh, yeah. There's some great resources online. Yeah. There's a lot of forums and Facebook groups. So, and that's the biggest thing is just, you know, start watching videos and then get into, if you want to do this, get into some of those Facebook groups, you know, Light-O-Rama, and just start, you know, looking. There's a lot of people are putting up tutorials about how to make certain things on YouTube. So, mm-hmm. And that's one thing with the internet. And now it's like people are just, you know, making all kinds of things to help out people. So if you're definitely interested, get an early start and start looking it up right now for 2015.
I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes, but you know, right now a lot of the vendors are doing pre-sales. They'll go out and, you know, pre-sell a lot of the lights and you know, light strings and things like that, because then they'll go and make bulk orders to China, and that stuff usually gets here like late summer, I think, typically, but you can get some really good deals right now if you're pre-ordering. The company that we've mentioned several times, Lightorama, they're really kind of the, I think, the only game in town that's really left making the hardware that interfaces. It's those 16-channel controllers that Rich was talking about, where you know, they basically, you have 16 plugs, like 16 outlets on it, and you interface it with your computer. There's all kinds of stuff if you want to get into pixels. I know Lightorama has their big sale in the summer, so your credit card can recover a little bit if you buy a bunch of things now in the pre-sales for the light strings, and you know, then you can get your credit card back out in, you know, July or August for the Lightorama sales and get started. But yeah, planning, you can't start soon enough, really. And just even starting with pictures of your house and sitting down and thinking about, you know, where you'd put lights and, you know, what kind of elements you might put in the yard. And are you a blow mold person who wants to put out a bunch of blow molds or inflatables or, you know, the arches, mini trees, all kinds of fun little things, mega trees. There's a million things that you can get and put out there. So I'll put a bunch of links to some of the websites and some of the vendors in the show notes if you're interested. It's a fun hobby. I recommend looking at it at the very least. And then, like Jeff, you can run screaming.
I'd rather take my $5,000 and go down and see the Osborne lights at Disney World.
Well, it also helps if you're not afraid of heights, right, Jeff?
Yeah, that's pretty much the no-go for Jeff.
So, Richard, if people want to get a hold of you and talk to you about work, how can they do that?
The best thing is just to go to my website, holdmanlighting.com. That's my website. And there I have a contact with a phone number and an email address. And so I actually sell the Lightorama equipment too.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm one of their partners and everything. And usually if people are buying quite a few controllers from me, I'll usually give them some free sequences too. So.
You can't go wrong with that. I mean, Richard's sequences are the best. If you go out and just do some searches, you'll see his. And I mean, they're great. I really like them. I'm a big fan.
Well, thanks. Yeah, there's a lot of people that do some great programming out there. And like, I believe, programming either makes or breaks the show. Because
totally.
I see some people, they put a ton of work into their display. And then the programming is just, it's not quite, it could be so much, much better. But there's a lot of people though out there and that do some amazing programming. And that's when, just look at some of the videos on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you'll see, small displays in terms of, it's not 100,000 lights. It's, 10,000 or 15,000 lights. And, it's 32 channels. And with the right programming, it's amazing. And, hey, I've got a soft spot in my heart. Anybody who puts lights up and, goes to the effort to try and do something, you get an A for effort, and then it just gets better from there.
Oh, yeah, that definitely. I mean, anybody puts up any kind of lights, on their house, even if you throw them up and they're not straight, run them along the gutter, you spent 5 minutes doing it, that's a lot better than the person that may have done nothing,
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely thumbs up.
Well, I know we've been talking for quite a while now. We still have some other things to talk about. I don't know, guys, do you want to do a long episode, or are you happy with what we've got and want to wrap it up for tonight? I put the question to you.
I'm ready to wrap it up.
You're ready to wrap it up. Jeff is.
You've just been listening. Jeff's been listening to just these Christmas light freaks just talk.
No, I mean, it's very interesting. I find it extremely interesting. I just, how how much are we going to torture people just because I find it interesting?
No. Yeah, I know.
I don't want people who don't find the things I find interesting to listen to me.
Well, I totally agree.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for, folks.
Well, the segment that we do every time, I want to make sure we at least do that. And that's to talk about the things that we love. And I don't know, Richard, if you've got something that you have can contribute for something that you love. But if you do, we'd love to have you, you know, share it with us. And I don't know, Jeff, if you're ready, but let's do that. And then we'll wrap it up and say thank you again to Richard for coming and sharing some of his stories with us.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, something like technology based I love, or maybe you can go first. And
it could be literally anything.
TV show, book, movie.
A gadget, something that makes your life easier.
Band-Aids. What, you know.
It's literally anything that we are liking right now.
I'll think about that. Do you have something you want to share first?
I do. You know what I love right now? I just got this thing maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I love it. It's a little universal cell phone car dock, and it's called the Nexcon Magnetic Universal Car Phone Dock. That's a great name, right? What it is it's just a little stick-on cell phone dock like you'd expect, but instead of having like a clamp or a little basket or something like that, it just has it's a little round, flat surface, and it's got one of those super powerful magnets in it. And then it comes with these really super thin pieces of metal. They look like stainless steel. And you stick it between the case and the back of your cell phone. I think it actually even comes with one or two that have like a 3M sticky pad, so you could stick it right to your phone if you're caseless. So I just throw it in the back of my phone between the phone and the case. Don't even notice it. And then whenever I get it in and out of the car, I just kind of toss it in the general direction of it, and it sticks right on. It is rock solid. I haven't hit a bump or anything that makes it move. It hasn't fallen off. And then when I get where I'm going, I grab my phone and get right out. I have tried probably, I'm going to say 7 or 8 different car docks over the last, well, ever since the iPhone came out back in 2007. And they're always lacking something. And man, I can't find anything I don't like about this one. The best part is it's cheap. I think I paid $15 for it on Amazon. So it gets 2 thumbs up for me.
And I'll throw in there, Logitech actually makes a series of cases now that have a built-in metal part.
Oh, that's nice. In them.
And they, of course, sell their own dock as well, but it's not $15. That's actually the case that Anne picked for her iPhone 6.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Just because she liked the way it looked, not because we used the magnetic thing until you just showed me this one, which I'm going to order for her.
Yeah, it works great. And, you know, it's cheap. If it does break for some reason or falls apart, I don't care. I'll buy another one. It is definitely the best car dock that I've ever used. You know, I do put a case on mine. I wouldn't like it if I was caseless and had to stick a little piece of metal on the back, but you know, I'm willing to deal with that since I do put a case on my phone.
Sure. So, what I love, I don't think you actually covered this, but I'm going to throw it in there, and it's something that you brought to my attention, and I kind of am cursing you a little bit for it because I've pretty much listened to it nonstop for about 16 hours, and that is the Serial podcast. And this may be a little passe because I know it's getting all these accolades, and the reason it's getting all these accolades is because, by God, it is a good podcast. So we promise you no better than average, and gosh darn it, we deliver, because these people put a lot of time and energy and thought, and it is just an amazing podcast. It follows the story of an individual in Baltimore who was convicted of murder and kind of goes along and looks at the facts, the not so many facts, the different characters that are kind of involved in the case. And I cannot recommend it enough. It is amazing. And if you only listen to one podcast, listen to that one and forget ours, because
No. Listen to ours and then listen to Serial.
Well, you know, Serial is only a few episodes, so listen to theirs and then come back, because, you know.
Yeah, it is really good.
It's really good. And then the other thing I love, I'm just going to throw it in there, is the Colts, because of their wonderful.
Yes. How about those Colts?
Football skills today. Yay. Go Colts.
Is it bittersweet that if it's Peyton's last game, he lost to the Colts? I thought that was kind of cool. My girlfriend thought that it wasn't, but if you gotta be defeated and it's your last game, which he hasn't said it is, it feels kind of like maybe it's not a bad thing to go out with against the team that you built.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, I love Peyton. I kind of hope he retires. I think it was fairly evident in the game. He doesn't have the arm he used to have. And I just hate to see an athlete just hang on and then get themselves hurt or make themselves an embarrassment. And you know that the man is going to be able to get a coaching job anywhere he wants. He could do TV, he could do whatever he wants, basically. And Peyton, I know that you're listening to the show because you're a huge fan. Yeah. Right. But seriously, I think it's time for him to go. And you know, in a way, losing to the Colts, yeah, that's probably, you know, not a bad thing, right?
Yeah, well, time will tell.
Better than losing to New England, right?
Yeah. Have you had a chance to think of something that you love, Richard?
Yeah, well, I talked a little bit about how I'm a ham radio operator. I don't know if you guys are ham radio operators or ever thought about it.
You know, it is something that I have always wanted to do, and it always scared me off because of the code word requirements. And a few, like maybe 2 years ago, I was kind of looking at it, and I saw that they've dropped code word.
Oh, yeah.
For your entry-level license. So it's something that I've kind of thought about doing. And I guess you can get a pretty decent little radio setup for pretty short money on Amazon.
Yeah, in fact, that's what I want to talk about. So yeah, my call sign, I'm K7DJX, like a DJ, because I have a DJ business too. So K7DJX is my call sign for you other hams out there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they used to require Morse code, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, has it been gone that long?
Oh yeah. And so I got my ham radio license maybe 5 years ago, and I didn't. In the ham radio world, they call it CW, but the Morse code. But now it's pretty much you just have to, and you can actually. I actually read a book and kind of understand the technology and the terms, how it works. But then they actually have 100 questions that they choose from. It's back 100 or maybe a few bit more, and you can actually study just the questions and answers. So it's actually pretty easy to do. But, you know, I recommend people, they go out there, you get a book to kind of learn about just how ham radios work, but then you can actually study the questions and answers. But there's a lot of really great radios out on the market. And one thing that I recently got, and this was back in it's actually a few months ago before I went to Argentina, because I have a little Kenwood ham radio, but it's a little more expensive. It's like $250, and I'm always scared to like take it places. I'm actually going to another country on the airport. I don't know if they're going to try to confiscate it.
Sure.
But I picked up these radios off Amazon.com. It's called the Baofeng. It's Baofeng. And these radios are only $30, $35. And I thought they were just going to be junk. But they are really good radios, and it's almost as good as my Kenwood.
Wow.
And it's $35, and what's really nice about it, and I don't know how they're doing it, they're selling these on Amazon where they're like fully open the frequencies on to ham radio and also to the Motorola, you know, the two-way family radios, and even marine radio frequencies, and like it's just amazing that, I mean, just right out of the box, they're just open to so many frequencies. And these were really nice because when I was in Argentina, I was able to, because they all have their radios there on a certain frequency, I was able to dial that right in and be able to be on their radio network.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and they're only like $35. And with Prime, it was free shipping. And I am just amazed at how good these radios are. Huh. So if you've been thinking about ham radio, yeah. And if you've been thinking about getting a cheap, you know, start off with it's a really good unit, but $35, you can't really go wrong. So that's the Baofeng, Baofeng.
I'm going to have to look at that again. Is, you know, one thing with the world moving so quickly to digital this and digital that, is there still an active, you know, ham community out there? Are there people to talk to still?
Yes, there are. What's been really interesting in the ham radio world, this is like a whole nother topic, is, you know, they got this voice over IP, like ham radio style. And there's repeaters that are on the mountains. I'm here in Utah, and I can get on my little ham radio and I can hit a repeater that's a few miles away. And I can actually punch in a code and I can come out on some mountain over in Japan.
Oh, that's cool.
And people are on their ham radios. And so they have this technology now where you can pop out on some repeater on some mountain in all these foreign countries, which is really fun.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Now you've convinced me. I'm going to have to get a book and start studying. That's amazing.
I passed the test when I was in high school.
Did you?
And I haven't used it since. So there you go. Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, because I looked at it back in high school, and that Morse code requirement, I was like, man, I'm not that committed. But now that they don't have that, and that I know that you can do that kind of thing where you hop on and come out in another country, that's amazing.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's three levels you can have. You can have your technician, and that's the first one, then your general, that's where I am. And then your extra.
Yeah.
And so the technician one, you use frequencies that they can maybe, you can maybe go about 50-100 miles if it's really good. But then the higher ones, you start using lower frequencies where you're start bouncing them off the atmosphere, you know, then you start trying to go, you know, 1,000-2,000 miles or more.
Yeah, and that's where the equipment, I think, starts to get a lot more expensive too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you spend $1,000 on a decent radio and everything. But, you know, with some of these repeaters now, especially when you can pop out on some, you know, mountain, and there's thousands of them all over the world. And so that's kind of a fun thing to do.
That's cool. I'm definitely going to look into that. That is awesome. Thank you for that tip, Richard.
You bet.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. We really appreciate it, and I hope our listeners do too. Appreciate you spending the time with us. It's been really informative, even being in the hobby. It's been interesting for me. So, you know, maybe one of these days we'll have you back and talk ham radio stuff after I get a little bit more versed on that. But appreciate your time today. It has been awesome. So I think we're at a stopping point, everybody. If you are still listening, thank you for staying with us till this time. We will be back next week, and we'll talk some more tech topics or something else that interests us. In the meantime, if you want to send a comment, please feel free to send an email to feedback@nobettershow.com or follow us on Twitter @nobettershow. Jeff, if people want to reach out to you, how can they get in touch with you?
I'm @JeffChaney on Twitter. I am Jeff Chaney on Facebook, and they can always email the show, and I try to keep up on those as well.
Yeah, if you've got a comment or question that you would like to call in and actually say in person with your own voice, we will listen and put it on an upcoming episode. You can reach us at 317-643-1212. Again, that's 317-643-1212. You don't even have to talk to anybody. It will go straight to voicemail. So no awkward conversations with someone you don't really know. If you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter. I am @NotTheRealJacob. If you like the show, we would really appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us and subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes. That's the best way for us to keep building our audience. That really helps us out a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Again, we want to thank Richard Holdman for coming on and talking to us about the Christmas extreme Christmas light decorating. It is an interesting hobby, and I will post some links and in the show notes if you are interested in getting into it. And if you got any questions, you know, email the show. I'll be happy to take it offline and give you some additional information too. I think that's all we've got today. You have just listened to the Know Better Than Average show, so now you should know better than average too. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you again. I'm sorry about the snafu with the time, but I'm glad that it worked out and you were able to come
well,
on.
Well, no, I was trying to think. I just assumed he's probably talking his time zone, so I assumed that's what it was.
Yeah, so. I apparently had a brain fart and forgot that there's the rest of the world.
Oh man, well yeah, I'm so used to working, especially like when I was like over in Russia. It's like exactly opposite of here. So.
Oh, I can't even imagine like trying to do that at Christmas and, you know, still have some kind of semblance of a family life. That's got to be rough.
Well, then, like, all the lights that I order now from, like, I was having all this stuff shipped from China to Peru and even to Argentina with some of the stuff. And dealing with China, you know, it's like I have to talk at night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then they're in the morning there. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So does all that stuff get scrapped or do you save it?
The Christmas lighting for each show, the commercial ones. And so what happens is they take it down. And so I don't go back to take it down, but they'll take down all the lights and we'll reuse the lights.
Okay.
And stuff. So
I just wondered, I know Disney just throws it away.
I wonder if they still do that with LEDs.
They do.
I can't even imagine the budget to do that every year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wonder, because it might get to the point where the labor and stuff is, because I'm sure Disney, they buy so many, and I'm sure they're dealing with factories direct and everything, because I cut off, when I did it at my dad's house, the lights were, they're about 3 years old, and they're starting to fade, and it was about 150,000 lights, and I just cut them all off the tree. And what was interesting is that my older sister, because I was going to throw them all away, she goes, I'll take all these. I'll take them down for scrap.
I go, sure. God.
And they gave her like $200.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of good copper in there.
I think that's what Disney does. They just scrap them.
Wow. Well, how many lights do they put up, though? I mean, I know that they decorate like a whole area of the park.
2.5 million.
Oh, that's it. That's not as many as I would have guessed.
Yeah.
Huh.
They do a lot of stuff with projection and...
Oh, yeah, we could have talked about that. Have you dabbled any in, like, the 3D projection stuff?
The only thing I've really done is... I actually have a Halloween video on YouTube.
Oh, you do?
I don't know, where it's, like, projection on the pumpkins and the pumpkins are singing.
Sure. I didn't know that you had one. I've seen videos like that.
Yeah, and so I have... Yeah, so that's the only thing I've messed with. But I've had a few people ask me about it and everything. So I know people that kind of do it, but
really, that's pretty cool. I mean, I've seen
some
of those online.
But the projectors you have to use they're real expensive.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Have you seen the World of Color stuff?
Yeah, I've seen that down at Disneyland.
Yeah. And
so that's kind of cool. And then
my nerd hobby is Disney. So.
Oh, okay. And so, that's kind of, so you know about how all the ears, they change color with the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of neat, the technology they use behind that.
Yep.
Like infrared.
Yes.
Everything. So, but it's funny because my friend I was talking to, he said, it was just that World of Color. He goes, you should go down there and help them. I need some help. I'm all, what? Are you serious? I go, you're the first person. He goes, I didn't really like it. I go, you're the first person I've ever heard that said they didn't like it.
Really? I have never
heard that. That Disney just doesn't know how to put on a show.
I was like, I go, are you serious, Paul? I go, you're the first person I've ever heard say that.
Is World of the Color the one where they shoot the water in the air and then shine the lights onto the water?
Yeah, and they have lit fountains and then people buy Mickey ears that light up, and they use infrared to make those all change color to the show, too.
Oh, get out. That's cool.
Yeah.
So the crowd is sequenced.
Yes, the crowd is
that's
sequenced.
That's cool.
Yes.
It's kind of, I thought they, because I was like, oh, that's really cool. And they do, I mean, the show's amazing, but, and they do kind of, I noticed they don't use the ears a lot. I don't know if, I thought they would use it more, but maybe they want to draw the attention to just the show.
Yeah, the Christmas show, they used them a little more.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
It's interesting that infrared is reliable enough in an outdoor setting like that to work.
Well, of course, it has to be something cheap, It can't be like Wi-Fi or something.
No, but I mean, wireless stuff is getting so cheap these days. I'm curious at what point they might switch. I mean, you could buy little, Zigbee transmitters for next to nothing these days.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well,
Disney's kind of leading the way on the wireless technology. I think they're doing a pretty good job.
Oh yeah. Well, the infrared, it makes sense. It's really cheap and it doesn't use a lot of battery power.
Yeah, that's true.
And everything. So.
That's really cool.